Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Face Connecticut on WTIC News Talk 1080, 96.5 TICFM, and Light 100.5 WRCH. Aaron Kupek with you this Sunday morning, and we are pleased to be joined by Michelle Reardon-Nold. She is Executive Director of the Connecticut Data Collaborative. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Well, you have an interesting story to tell about voting related to the numbers that your organization has been crunching, and we will get to that in a moment. But first, tell us about the Connecticut Data Collaborative. Why do you exist and what do you do?
So the Connecticut Data Collaborative, our mission is to democratize access to public data and build data literacy skills. Our work involves, many different aspects to our work. We hold workshops, like I said, to increase data literacy. So it could be workshops about data storytelling, data visualization, data analysis. We also have a website, ctdata.org, where we make over 200 public data sets available to the public via our visualization tools. They are easy to use and access. And then we work on particular projects. We help make the Secretary of State's business registration data available to the public. And then what I'm here to talk about today is one of our more recent projects, which is assisting Get Out the Vote efforts by providing them with data to identify where there are areas of opportunity in the state to register non-registered voters, right? So to increase turnout.
Give us an idea of some of the data that is available that people may not know about that's out there in general terms, not just voting to start.
We have a lot of census data that we provide to the public. So it would be demographic information. So, population counts by town, population by race by town. We have housing data. So average rent, we have median household income, we have educational attainment data, we provide State Department of Education data as well, so information about school districts, for example, chronic absenteeism rates or performance on standardized tests. We have health data. We have a behavioral health portal. We have a women and girls data platform. So that is particular data disaggregated by gender. So economic data, health data, housing data, all disaggregated by gender, and a lot more. You can spend lots of time on our website, and if you're a data person, you can find yourself going down many rabbit holes.
And what story does the data tell when it comes to voting? I understand you have focused in particular on the Hartford region.
We did. So this particular project was, we got support from the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving to put this out. So what we did is we took the Secretary of State's voter registration file and we aggregated it to block group. For those who aren't familiar with that terminology, it's the Census Bureau has different geographic levels, and block group is the smallest based on population size. And what we tried to show was we took another census data set called the voter eligible voter registration data. So, and compared it to how many people were actually registered in the Secretary of State's registration file, and then showed through a map, and we made this data available statewide, showed through a map where there were higher percentage and number of potentially unregistered voters. We also, the DMV put out a file also showing potentially unregistered voters based on their data. As you know, you can go to the DMV and register to vote when you get your license or renew your license. So they also provided data. And then what we did is we analyzed that data for the Hartford region and put together what we call a data story. And you can find it on our website, ctdata.org/vote. And we looked at how many where there were highest number of towns of non-registered voters, We explored, also we explored the turnout in 2016 to give us an idea of potentially the turnout for this year and where there might be opportunities to help increase that turnout. And then we also looked at young voters.
Walk us through your findings. What are the key points?
One of the interesting findings is that when we look at percentage of estimated non-registered voters, a few towns, Summers and Enfield, both show up as the top two potential towns of non-registered voters, and Suffield is number four. And that was surprising to us, but then what we realized is that the Census Bureau counts prisoners where they're incarcerated and not where they're from. So they're showing up in the towns where we do have large prison populations. So some prisoners are eligible to vote, so there is potential to get them to vote, but it did sort of skew what we were expecting. But when you do look at when you look at pure numbers, so populations, towns or cities where there are large numbers of people who appear to be not registered to vote, Hartford is the highest with approximately 14,000, Enfield with 9,000, and Manchester with 6,000. So there still is, in our larger cities and towns, the opportunity, and what we were trying to show for groups and organizations that were working on get out the vote efforts is that there are, you know, still large populations of people in our bigger cities who are not registered.
You've also uncovered some interesting information what comes to the age of people who are registered versus not.
We did. So, you know, I hear, and I'm sure you must hear too, in the media that, you know, young people participate at lower levels. And so we did take a look to see, is that true in our data? And in the Hartford region, there's approximately 93,000 people who are registered, who were between the ages of 18 and 29 during the 2016 presidential election. And of those who were 18 to 29 at that time, 47% of them voted. So although that number is probably lower than it actually was, because some of those folks might not have lived in Connecticut in 2016, so they might have just not voted in Connecticut, but voted in another state, it still does show a low percentage. You know, it's 47%, so less than half that showed up to vote. So my hope is that there seems to be increased energy around this election and that more young people will show up. And so we will be taking a look at that post this year's election.
We've heard from the Secretary of the State's office that the voter rolls in Connecticut have never been larger. Over 2.3 million people registered to vote now. Is that any indication of turnout on Tuesday? Do you have a sense of what things are going to look like?
Yeah, I mean, it is an indicator, right? You would think that people who are highly motivated to register, you know, there has been a huge surge in registration. So if people go through the effort of registering, I would imagine they would go through the effort of voting as well. And this year, they made it easier for folks to register in that everybody could have an absentee ballot. So I do think we are going to see increased voter turnout because of the different opportunities to vote. You don't just have to vote on November 3rd. You can submit your absentee ballot via ballot box. And that is one other resource that we do provide on our website on ctdata.org/vote, is we show a map where ballot drop boxes are available across the state.
And a couple of public service announcements here. First of all, the drop boxes. We are hearing from officials that at this point, if you haven't returned your ballot or your application by now, it's best to use the drop box instead of the mail, and you should be using the drop box in the town or city in which you are registered. And also, the ship has sailed for pre-registration before the election, but you can still show up on election day at your local town or city hall for election day registration. Is not at the polling place. It's at most town and city halls across Connecticut. Now, I know the voter registration efforts have been massive leading up to election day. Give us an idea of what the groups you've been working with have been doing with this information to get people signed up to vote?
Yeah, I mean, we've received, you know, great response because prior to this, the data did not exist in an accessible format for statewide. So particularly if you're a nonpartisan organization, partisan organizations have access, but not nonpartisan organizations. So what we have, what we heard from many groups was that they were able to hone in on particular areas and really target those areas for outreach. So go door to door, or if they were able to use our maps and find a grocery store or another public place where they could set up a table to encourage voter registration and have voter registration materials available. So they really, the data was really used to target areas where there were potentially unregistered voters and try and get them to get register and put the resources where they live.
And using big data is something that has really caught on among political campaigns, hasn't it? I mean, they are able to use this information to really target the voters they want to reach.
Yes, they do. They have their proprietary tools where they can slice and dice the voter registration rolls and look at past turnout to predict future turnout. And they're well oiled, right, in terms of their voter outreach.
You're listening to Face Connecticut. We are talking to Michelle Reardon-Nold. She is Executive Director of the Connecticut Data Collaborative. I understand you have a new data set out related to housing in Connecticut. Tell us about that.
In partnership with the Partnership for Strong Communities, this year we helped put out their housing profiles. So what we built an interactive data platform where you can view lots of different data about housing and demographics by town and county. And then you have access to a PDF profile for each town and each county in the state. The data, although they are the housing data profiles, it is broad. There's demographic data in addition to housing data. So these were just released today. So I encourage everyone, if you go to Partnership for Strong Communities website, you can find them on their website, and you can also find them on ctdata.org.
Now, this is a year where a census is being conducted. Does that kind of excite you as a data person? Does that mean there's going to be a bunch of new information to analyze in the coming months and years?
It does, yes. We were heavily involved in the Census 2020 outreach efforts to get everyone to ensure they were counted. But it does, it is, it's, you know, the every 10 years, the count of the population. So now we will, after, once the data are released, have a true count of how many people live in Connecticut. And from there, you know, usually population projections are built off of the decennial census. So that will be also, once that data are released, time to redo the population projections for Connecticut. So there are a lot of exciting new, and then of course there's representation. The map is drawn for representation based on the decennial census. So there's lots of things that the decennial census is important for.
I know you mentioned a big source is census data. I gather there are a bunch of sources at the state level as well. How good is Connecticut compared to other states in making this data accessible?
Connecticut does quite well. I mean, we do have a chief data officer at the state, works out of the Office of Policy and Management, and the state does have an open data portal. There's a lot of data that's made available through that. There is a state data plan as well. And we actually have a conference on November 9th and 10th, and we're going to be having a session to share the draft of the state's chief data officer. Will share a draft of the state data plan and get comment and feedback on it. So we are really ahead of the curve in terms of what we provide to the public, and then also the work that gets done to make more data available to the public.
Explain to us why that is important, because I would suspect that the average person hearing this does not have the interest or maybe even the time to go through and find this information and crunch the numbers. But thankfully, there are people that do that.
Right. And we are one of them, right? So CT Data, Connecticut Data Collaborative, is the organization that makes how we describe our work is we make the data accessible. So the state's chief data officer makes sure that the data is available, right? So in its raw form on the open data portal, but we take it and then we, through our visualization tools, a broader audience is able to use and understand the data. So, for example, we take the COVID data that is put out by Department of Public Health, and we have a dashboard on our site that enables you to look at that data by town, look at it by race, ethnicity, and, you know, with just and see the trend over time in terms of where we are each day and week. So really, if you want to know how many cases are in your town with a click, you can see that very easily. And so that's what we do. So we make it easy for the public to find the number they're looking for and understand what's happening in their community, in their region, in their county, in their town.
Certainly COVID data, I'm guessing, has a lot of interest these days, as does voting data. But how do you choose what other data sets to really dig into?
Right. COVID is a huge interest right now, but a lot of our work, we work with other partners. Many organizations partner with us because we do provide a unique service in that we have both the analytical skills and the visualization skills, and to take data from its raw format, analyze it, visualize it, and tell a story about it. So organizations work with us to provide that technical service that is often hard to find. And then plus we reach a broad audience through just from having been around for a little while, and also our outreach efforts in terms of teaching everyone how to fish is what I like to say, but how to use data. So through our data literacy workshops, we are able to raise the boat, right? Is that the phrase they use? Right. So raise everybody's skill level and make everybody data people.
As the saying says, the numbers don't lie, but I would suspect that some numbers need context. You know, I'm thinking back to what you mentioned about the voting and the towns that have prisons in them. You do need some information beyond the raw data to kind of put the numbers into context, especially when you see information that might be surprising.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's very hard to, and that is, you know, part of what we do teach is being a critical consumer of data, right? It's very, there's a number, but then there's a story behind the number, and there's often people behind the numbers. But for example, we have we make the business registration data available to the public. And one question we get in there is, it doesn't necessarily show you true business activity because, for example, those real estate transactions can be set up through an LLC. So some folks will put their house in a trust and that becomes an LLC. So it's not necessarily true business activity in the sense of what economic development folks are interested in looking at. So it's very important when you are looking at the raw data to understand the ins and outs of how the data are collected and what they mean.
If someone wants to get started exploring the wealth of information that is available out there, what advice do you have? Where should they start?
Well, of course they should start at our site, ctdata.org. We always say, start with your question, right? And then, and that will drive the source you look at. We recommend when you're looking for data, state and federal sources of data are the best places to go. If you're looking for because those are typically the primary sources of the data. But, you know, we also have a helpline, info@ctdata.org, where we get lots of questions, people who are starting a project or applying for a grant or have a question and need help finding data. And so we do that as well, help people find data.
Have groups come to you and said, hey, I have this interesting data set. Do you want to host it or analyze it? Does that happen?
It does happen. Yeah. And that is always exciting when we do have someone who's interested and who's done the work in terms of cleaning the data set. And so we will work with them to make it available to the public.
As someone who does this for a living and analyzes data day in and day out, do you have a sense of how well government is doing making decisions based on data versus based on emotion or, well, we've always done it that way? Is government catching on that this can help make better decisions?
Yeah, they are. And I mean, you know, it's a testament to, you know, our existence too, in that the legislature saw the real value in making data available to the public and, you know, sees us as a great resource for the public. You know, there are lots of efforts underway at different state agencies, and we're working with many of them to use data to better understand their work. And there's, you know, many efforts underway too, also within the state to integrate the data, right? So to look at some of these social sector challenges that cross multiple agencies. And so that's really exciting to see government, you know, trying to use data, link it and not, you know, link it across agencies. So take them out of the government silos and really try and solve the problems across sector. So I have seen a transformation in the use of data. I mean, the fact that we do have a state's chief data officer does show the importance. There's, you know, a lot of work to do, and I think that will always be the case. There's, you know, even with the COVID data, revealed the importance of breaking it down by race, ethnicity, and that is really important. Is that in order, you know, to understand some of these systematic inequalities that exist, we do have to collect the data by race and ethnicity and then analyze it that way. And there are areas where we don't, right? So there is a lot of opportunity for growth and improvement. But we do have areas where we have really done well as a state. I mean, I would, you know, just a shout out to the Institute for Municipal Regional Policy runs the Racial Profiling Prohibition Project. And that is an example where we are a leader in terms of collecting traffic stop data, but not just collecting it, but analyzing it and identifying if disparities exist. And other states have now followed the method that we've applied to that data. So there's always room for growth, right, and improvement. But we have done a good job, I would say.
She is Michelle Reardon-Nold, Executive Director of the Connecticut Data Collaborative. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Aaron, for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Face Connecticut. I'm Aaron Kupek. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.